everyone, and welcome to episode 103 of season 11 of Move Our Minute, the daily podcast, where we curry our way through the 2001 HBO award-winning miniseries Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again is Tierney Steele of One Steel Sister. Welcome back to the show, Tierney.
Well, thanks for having me back. I'm still wondering if curry is a verb, but sure, yeah, let's do this.
Well, what's wrong with currying, you know, making it a verb, you know?
I mean, currying can be whatever you feel it is exactly. In your heart. Yeah,
back when I did Die Hard, I was yippee-ki-yaying my way. So is that also, you know, it's it's me creating a new verb.
There you go.
You know, making I'm branding it. How's that?
There you go.
Yeah, you can make anything a verb, whether it's true or not is something else, you know. that doesn't make a difference. I sometimes drive my wife crazy by just making things plural that are not meant to be plural, you know. Mm. So, you know, it's fun sometimes just to mess with people with that. So, episode 103 begins with Webster trying to convince Winters and ends with the men moving stealthily. Mm-hmm. So we ended things yesterday with Webster realizing that maybe he needs to, you know, take one for the team and try to do something in order to help, others with the way that stuff goes. So he approaches Winters as Winters is still planning things out. Again, I didn't go deep into this yesterday when we were talking about it, but I love the way that Winters is so hands-on with this entire raid, this entire patrol. Mm. You know, usually you'd have a high-ranking commander that would say, okay, this is what I want you to do, and he's going to give you a general outline of what you should do and how you should do it. Mm-hmm. But Winters goes into very specifics.
Yeah.
About the whole thing. He's not letting Martin explain it to the guys. He's not letting whatever. Obviously, he's not going to let Jones do it. But my point is that usually you let the lower ranking officer or the commander, whether it, you know, even if it's an NCO, explain things. I guess you can look at it from the perspective that the high ranking commander needs to use as little words as possible when giving his orders. Mm. Doesn't need to go into detail. But someone like Winters wants to go into detail because he wants to make sure that everything goes according to plan. And he himself has planned it all out, even if he doesn't need to do it, because these are his men. These are the you know, the guys that he helped train and wants them to succeed and make it back home.
So he's a control freak. It's okay. We love a Virgo King.
Okay, you can look at it from that perspective too.
Yeah, no, the first time I watched, well, these clips back to back, but this scene, there was a little bit of like, he's not actually trying to get out of, like, he is doing this to get Liebgott out of it, right? Like, I am reading the room correctly.
As opposed to him trying to get out of it himself.
Yeah, yeah. And I think I've come to the impression that, yeah, he's like, look, there's two of us. The other guy doesn't need to come as well, because like you said, he's trying so hard to be one of the gang again.
Right. I think he's trying to, do something in order to, curry favor with, you know, make a few friends.
Now, my big question is, do you think this would work? Do you think this does anything other than, you know, get him a little smile here?
Do you think it works with the men, or do you think it should work with the commanders?
Oh, no, with the men.
With the men, maybe not.
Yeah.
With Liebgott, maybe.
Okay.
That's the thing, because the only one who's getting off the hook here is Liebgott. It's not everyone else. So, you know, but I also look at it from perspective, okay, Saving Private Ryan, the whole problem that Miller had when he was putting together his squad of men that was going was he didn't have a translator, right? Because he, you know, my two guys both died. Okay, and I guess from that perspective, you know, if you want to learn from what John Miller had, what happened to John Miller, it's you know, keep if you only have two translators, keep them separated. Don't send them the same attack. You know, you
good
don't want
point.
You know, I don't 100% believe that there's obviously any real connection between the decision that John Miller made in a fictional Saving Private Ryan and the real story of Easy Company here, but there is logic to it. You know, we even saw it when they were in Bastogne, where you had Doc Rowe and Doc Spina in the same foxhole, and even Dyke looked at it and goes, two medics in the same foxhole? I don't think that's a good idea.
Yeah. No, I assumed it would work on the commander just because we know Winters doesn't want to send any of them. So the idea that he could keep one person home, he's obviously going to do.
Correct. But again, he knows he needs to send X number of people there. So it's not a question of, you know, we don't realize at this point, what we're about to find out, how many people there are. Because they said we're sending 15 men. I didn't count. You didn't count. No one counts. There's no reason to count. You know, you're going to look at the room. I mean, we could go back and look at the video footage from yesterday and see, you know,
that's okay. Webster counted for us.
Exactly. But that's my point. You know, we don't care. It doesn't matter how many, you know, they said 15. Okay. They're 15. That's it.
Yeah.
And, you know, so, Webster basically says to Spears and Winters, he goes, look, Liebgott and I, we both speak German. So Spears goes, okay, yeah. And then Webster continues and goes, you said 15 men. There are actually 16 of us, including two translators.
Because now we have an observer.
That's right. And Spears looks at him and goes, okay, well, fine. And then he screams over and goes, hey, Liebgott, you want to sit this one out? You want to sit this one out? I love the way that he says it. It's like, we're going on a little excursion. We're going to be going on a little hike. Yeah, do you want to not come with us?
It's gym class when you have an uneven number of players.
That's right. That's right. Who's going to sit this one out? And do we have a volunteer? Oh, no volunteer. All right, Liebgott. Why don't you sit this one out?
Yeah.
Definitely. And Liebgott is all too happy to oblige this whole thing. And I mean, he does give a little bit of a look. He gives a little bit of a look and winks at Webster.
No, I worry that Liebgott thinks Webster was going to say, and I'll sit this one out. They literally just said he tries to get out of everything.
True. That's true.
And so I think
his wink is basically saying, screw you. They chose to keep me out. As opposed to, okay, it could be.
Yeah. The wink is, ha ha.
Okay.
That backfired on you, didn't it, buddy?
Yeah, even though I truly do believe that Webster was trying to call a
favor. Oh, yeah, yeah.
You
know. No, I get it because, like I said, when I first watched it, I was questioning it. But the more, because I knew I was going to be on the show, so I was like watching Webster really carefully. I'm like, okay, what's he trying to do? And it's like, he's obviously trying to ingratiate himself back with these guys.
Yeah.
And so when he says, okay, you don't need two translators, he's trying to like take one for the team. He's trying to be the Jones to the Malarkey Jones of translators.
Right.
But Liebgott doesn't know that. And they literally just were talking about how Webster tries to get out of everything. So I do worry that he has done this for nothing.
Okay. There is that possibility of that actually happening.
Yeah. I worry that wink and smile is more middle school bullying happening with this with this squad. But you know what? Hey, it gets us where we need to go in the story. That's fine. And you know, what happens afterwards, Webster will figure it out.
Correct. Very true. And at this point, then Spears continues, goes, "Martin, you want to supervise?" And Martin then says, "Thanks, buddy." And then Winters says, "All right, three squads." He goes, "Thank you, sir." He goes, "Or the 2-5s." Yeah. Anyway, about and he gets cut off. We don't really hear exactly the orders that he's giving as to how to break things up. But once again, Winters is very hands-on here, making sure they understand exactly what needs to be done. And we know that Winters is a great tactician. There's no question about that. Even though, the whole idea that his maneuvers at Bretoncourt Manor being taught at West Point is just complete bullshit. But you knew that, right?
It's the concept, it's
No,
the idea.
right. You
Yeah.
knew that, right?
And I like that. I didn't catch that he's giving Martin options.
Right.
Like, okay, you can do it this way or this way. Like, see which way looks better when you're there, sort of deal.
Exactly.
Which is smart, because he knows that in a combat situation, sometimes what you drew up as the perfect way to do it isn't gonna work.
That's right. And if it doesn't work, then you need to have a quick backup plan that you don't even need to think
Yeah.
about. You want a backup plan that is going to be right there. And so if it's something that you discuss, so you have it, you definitely have it clear in your mind at that very point, which I think is part of what Winters is trying to do here. He's basically saying, "Look, I want to help you as much as possible. Keep that in mind. These are your options. This is the one this is the one you've chosen to do. Okay, but keep the other option in mind
Yeah.
in case you need it as a plan B." Yeah. So I like the way that they present that.
Yeah.
And then we're back inside, and Martin is there with the men, and he goes, "All right, you men going on patrol? Skinny. Nothing rattles,
Oh.
nothing shines." And then he goes, "No helmets." Now I love the fact that they do this because I mean one of the things that I'm trying to remember which of the writers that I spoke to told me this. I don't remember because I've spoken to three of them, but they basically said that in real combat situations, there's no way that these men would ever walk around without helmets. But in order for us to be able to identify the various soldiers, they're constantly going to be giving options of not needing helmets along the way.
Yeah, for movie reasons,
Yes, exactly.
we will not be wearing helmets.
That's right.
I love that nothing rattles, nothing shines. I remember guys walking around saying that to each other.
Okay, and again, it makes 100% sense. I mentioned this in the first when I was talking to someone, during the first part, when they were in basic training with the water in the canteen. Okay, which is something that when I was in basic training, the whole idea is that they always said two guys to a canteen, right? Whenever you would stop, because the idea is you want to make sure that your canteen will not be making swishing sounds as you're moving. Therefore, you're also when you fill it up, you have to make sure that it's as airtight as possible. You're supposed to fill it up as high as possible, and then when you put the cap on, you press the canteen a little bit to get whatever air is there out, so that when you shake the canteen, it won't make any noise. And then when you do drink it, you have to finish the entire thing.
The whole
Yeah.
thing.
So I
Yikes.
and at the time I used to love drinking water at the time. So my friends would all fight over who gets to share a canteen with me, because they would want like a little sip, and then they just give me the rest of it, that type of thing. So yeah, it's interesting. But yeah, nothing rattles, nothing shines. Works out perfectly. And you'd think that the fact that Malarkey's been given the night off, that he would be relaxing somewhere, but instead he's actually giving, I guess, some sort of soup to people, or some sort of broth, or who knows what it is that he made, but he's got a ladle and he's pouring it
Yeah.
into little cups for them to
Yeah. And he's making Jones feel like a little bit more like part of the
That's
gang.
right.
It's very
That's
sweet.
right. He goes, Lieutenant, and also he lets Webster feel good too, because he's also giving Webster. It's like, all right, you guys should have a hearty little meal of
Yeah.
whatever it
You're
is
part of this.
before something might happen to you along the way. Now, did you notice that he pours some of whatever this is into Webster's cup, and apparently spills it on his pants,
Yes.
and Webster then is rubbing his pants to try to maybe get the stain out, or to dry it as quickly as possible. It's very
Yeah.
subtle, but it's great. And
That's I there was part of me was like, "Oh, did he purposely spill on him?" Then I'm like, "That doesn't seem like I think they're setting it up as like Malarkey is, the one who will make you feel welcome, the one who will try to, calm you before you go out on
that's
patrol."
right. And then Malarkey walks over to Jones, who's cleaning his weapon in front of everybody. Again, something that he's doing it in the way that somebody who just came from West Point would be doing it. I'm not saying you don't need to clean your weapon. You obviously do. But the way he's doing it looks more by the book than the way people would be doing it, in combat situations, I guess you could say. And Malarkey then starts up a conversation with Jones. He goes, "Are you set for tonight?" He goes, "I'm ready." He goes, "Those crafts are going to catch some hell." He goes, "So I hear. But I'm not personally going in." And then Malarkey goes, "It's Martin, right?" He goes, "Yeah, Martin and McClung. I'm supposed to stay in the rear and give them cover." Malarkey then says to him, It's the best place to be." And then we hear explosions in the background, going off while this is all happening. So, again, Malarkey is making an effort with Jones here, which works.
Oh, you saying about the explosions and the dust coming down reminded me. I forgot the great little detail of when they first walk into this scene. You see Martin's breath from how cold it is. When he exhales, before he starts talking, you can see Martin's exhalation.
Well, it is.
The steam
We
coming.
did see that there was a lot of snow on the ground when they started
Yeah.
this.
Just a nice little touch. Just a nice little touch.
Oh,
But anyway, yes,
they have
I
great touches here.
love Malarkey. Love Malarkey trying to make Jones feel better. Like, hey, like being an observer is be observe away. Like, that's what you want to be
That's
doing.
right. And what I love is that we see the explosion happen, and you see some like dust fall down from the roof, because of everything, the way everything's reverberating, from the explosion. And then we see the guys preparing themselves. We see one of the guys lights a lighter, and is burning the sights on his gun, to make sure that it's nicely done. You see Popeye is tightening something. You see another a couple guys, one of the
Oh, I thought he was putting tape over so the metal parts of that looked like a belt or something.
guys. It could be.
Didn't it look like he was like taping something? Anyway,
No,
sorry.
it could be, could be. And
I don't mean to interrupt. I love a getting ready for battle montage.
exactly. That's this typical A-team type of an A-team MacGyver type of stuff, the way that
Yeah,
they do that for sure. And then you see the guy dealing with the explosives, carefully clipping them. You see one of the other guys, I think it's Garcia, is taking care of his of putting his gun back together. A lot of different things are, and as this montage is going on, we once again get the narration from Webster, who says, "15 men are crossing a river to capture prisoners from a German observation post. Getting back safely could be success."
Oh, before we
Yeah, go ahead.
get
Yeah,
sorry,
it's okay.
just before we go outside with him, I loved the the guy who's literally threading the fabric through the chain so it doesn't make noise. I thought that was really cool. What's his face that has the whistle? They said his name in the last section, but I forgot it. And the fact that Jones has his West Point ring all of a sudden clicked with me that Jones does not have a girl back home. Like he didn't give it, which I know a lot of West Point guys would have like worn the ring to combat anyway. They wouldn't have given it to a girl, but like it just kind of drives home for me the like, this is a kid. This might be a virgin
It might be.
going on this
Even if
patrol.
he's having some stuff, you never know.
Which is fine, but I'm just saying like it him putting the ring away really just like drove home to me like, aw, use a
Right.
baby.
Okay.
Like use a little
Yeah.
baby. Okay, anyway, now
The
and
thing
that
that
and
gets
then
me about the ring is that on the one hand, so he doesn't want anything shiny, so he takes the ring off. But then he puts it around his neck, which means that is possible that it's going to make noise. That's the thing that gets me. You know, that doesn't really solve the problem.
Well, you can put tape around
But he
it so it
doesn't.
doesn't. I know. Well, we don't see him. Perhaps he hasn't learned that part
Could be.
yet.
Could be. Malarkey's going to come up to him and say, you should put tape around that.
Yeah, there we go. We got to give Malarkey a
Yeah, they
minute.
they cut that part out.
Now, how do you feel about the voiceovers in Band of
I
Brothers?
love them. I think they're great.
Okay.
I think it really gives us a sense of everything that's going on here. You know, and in you know every episode they do it differently. So you know we have the episode where Donnie Wahlberg playing Lipton gives his observations. We have the points that, you know, we have in this one with Webster. We're gonna have I think part 10 is narration with Winters. I think it's great. Are you asking a question because you don't like it, or?
I love the writing in this. Like, I love individual bits of it. I don't know that I love voiceover for Band of Brothers. Like, I would have preferred to keep that to like the beginnings and ends instead of having it throughout an episode, I feel
No,
like.
you see, I look at it from the perspective that there is so much going on here, and there's so much for us to take in that they have to do this in order to condense things and to convey things to us. Like, you know, Lipton telling us about the way that Dyke acts works so much better than just showing us the way Dyke acts. We see Dyke say, "Okay, I'm going to be at the command post," and then he disappears. But you know, you need to have the voiceover where he's saying, you know, Dyke would disappear for hours at a time because you can't show that. So it helps make it even more effective with the way they do that. You know, and Grammy Oss did a great job with that part. And I mean, I'm pretty sure he's the one. He said that he's the one who figured out the. You know, in the conversation with the real Carwood Lipton of how he was gonna frame that episode, and he said he's gonna be the narrator. And I think he even told me, if I remember correctly, that Donnie Wahlberg nailed it on the first. You know, they just recorded him once, and that's all they needed. So I'm pretty sure that's what he said. You know, I'd have to go back and re-listen to that episode to refresh my memory from that, but I'm pretty sure that's what he said.
It's hard in this episode because I feel like so much of what Webster is saying is like, no, we get it. You were gone and you've come back and things have changed. Okay. But then if we didn't have the voiceover, we wouldn't get this little speech, which is phenomenal.
Exactly.
So
That's
good.
right.
The as little as 10 minute speech is really good. Thank you so much for these minutes. They're so juicy.
Exactly. So basically, Webster then starts his narration once again and says, 15 men crossing a river to capture prisoners from a German observation post. Getting back safely could be successfully accomplished in as little as 10 minutes. The same mission could be met with disaster and result in nothing more than 15 Americans killed or wounded in action. Those of us who had seen combat before put that out of our minds. Those who hadn't probably thought of little else as we waited for darkness. So
And he's like looking out at the outpost, and he says, "As we're waiting for darkness to fall," and then darkness falls, and it's so good.
Right. And so you see, there you go. It's I mean, this is needed because you can't convey what he just said just visually. You need to have the combination of the narration, because he's not going to say this to somebody else. But he's saying it to us, and using Webster as the voice in this part also works really well, because Webster himself was a writer. I mean, if I remember correctly, he is the first of the guys from Easy Company who put out a book about his experiences.
Good point. I didn't even make that connection.
Right. And friend of the show, Jay Clue, also pointed out that he wrote books about sharks, which is probably why he eventually, you know, disappeared while on a boating trip. Maybe trying to find sharks.
But not this boating trip. We'll get there. but yeah, I also loved, and this speech also to me really hammers home the risk of this patrol and why Winters hates this so much. Mm-hmm. Of like, the war is over, but it's not. This might be a 10-minute no problem, or this could be a complete disaster. And it reminded me of, there's always this stereotype, especially I feel like you see this more in like World War One stuff, but I think it would happen in any conflict, of like, no one wants to be the last one killed. And actually, the TV show MASH, it used to come, like, no one, whenever they were negotiating a ceasefire, everyone would get really super cautious. Like, no one wants to get shot.
Correct.
When you're right there at the end, injured or worse. And so this really drove home the, like, why Winters hates this so much. Which is going to be more important.
Correct.
Further down this section,
but again,
I
think it's important.
Series.
You know, I think it's something they needed to have there in order to help push things forward.
Yeah. And then we get the most stressful river crossing.
Well, what do you expect? Something they needed to do.
Not to like knock the Germans or give them too much. How does no one notice these boats? They're not observing much for an observation post. Okay?
Correct. Correct.
That literally one capsizes and there are people screaming in this river and still nothing.
Okay, but you do have to take into consideration the fact that at this point in the war, this is February 45, most of the troops that are left to fight are not their elite troops. You know, it's the backups of the backups.
True.
And, you know, obviously, we know that it's not 100%
they
true.
They do not care.
Exactly. They say that, you know, they said that by Christmas time of 44, the Germans were pretty much sending out, you know, little boys and old men.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you for sure, but
yeah.
You know, so it is possible.
This little back bit of this 5-minute section, it stresses me out, because we have the capsizing and the screaming and no one is, and then they're so careful with the wire cutters. And I'm like, really? Really? No one came for all that commotion, but the little snip snip might be a problem. Anyway. I'll let you cover for your audience what I'm rambling on about, but
yeah.
Those are my thoughts.
Exactly. So at this point, you know, we see that the men are ready for this mission, and there's a lot of talk between them, but because it's dark, even though they're not wearing helmets, we don't know who everybody is with the way that they're talking. Any problems? No problems. It's secured to the tree. No sign of any AP mines. Let's go. And you go, Webster, come on. Keep it steady. Keep it steady. And so they get into the boat. And then, first of all, it's very clever, the idea that they have a rope going across that they're able to hand over hand in order to get there.
Yeah.
You know, I like the way that they do that. And, you know, they're just getting ready to take these rubber boats across. And, you know, as they're going, one of the boats capsizes. And we see, four guys trying to figure out what they're supposed to be doing. And they just have to keep going. Oh, shit. And then we hear Sisk scream out, I can't swim. Yeah, let's be quiet. And then we go, Garcia, grab Sisk. Okay, keep going. Come on, stay focused. Come on, come on. And they go, use the rope. Come on. And then they reach the other side, finally getting out of the boat. Obviously, Sisk and the guys in the boat that capsized stay on the first side of the...
Yeah, they were much closer to the American shore. Yeah,
what do you mean much closer? They're right there.
Yeah.
So they already have a lot less men going on this mission. Four less men, so they're only going to be 11 that are going instead of 18. But like you said, they take their time with the wire cutters to open it up. Martin pulls the wire cutters to the side and goes, "Let's go, come on!" And the men start moving across. So what's very interesting is in the book Band of Brothers, it does mention this scene of what happens, and it's just a short little paragraph, but. Basically, what it says is the first boat got across successfully. Two others made it. The fourth boat, with McCreary and Cobb in it, capsized. They drifted 100 meters or so downstream, managed to get out, tried again, only to capsize once more. They gave it up as a bad job and returned to OP2. So, again, they do a nice job of visualizing what's written in the, what's written in the book of the things that happened. You know, the fact that, one of these actually did capsize. it's not as if they've just added that in order to give us a little more action so that we see what happens.
Yeah.
You know, and it's good to have the book as a reference from that perspective in order to say, okay, well, you know, is this real or is it bad? And, oh, wait a second, this really did happen. They found a way to do that, you know, that type of thing. So I like that.
Yeah.
I like the way that they do that for us.
Yeah. I wonder if Sisk ever learned to swim.
Yes. Again, it's one of those things that it always shocks me to see in movies people who don't know how to swim. Because, you know, you think that should be a basic thing that everyone learns to do. Obviously not everyone is going to do that. There's no question about that. But on the other hand, it's just strange to see it.
Well, especially in a case where like people have been through basic training, like that couldn't have been a module, the basic, like, and now we'll teach you all how to at least doggy paddle.
Well, they're not in the Navy.
In your gear.
They're not in the Navy SEALs, you know, where they need to make sure that you
can do that. No, I know.
So from that perspective, I can sort of get it. But still, it's just a little strange. I mean, I'm a big fan of The Amazing Race, so I've like watched it every one of the seasons. And I remember there was one season, must have been a really long time ago, must have been at least 7 or 8 years ago, where they had the like two brothers that were on, and they're like talking about all the different things they needed to, you know, to study before they got there. You know, like there's apparently, you know, you can find lists of the type of things you need to learn to do before you go on these type of shows. And, you know, like you need to learn how to drive a stick shift, and you need to, because you never know what they're gonna, you know, what they're gonna throw at you, and you need to know these things. And one of them is you need to know how to swim. And one of the brothers neglected to learn how to swim, and they had a water. They had to do something in the water, and he was in big trouble because of that. So, you know, And to me, that always sticks out, the fact that, you know, if you say that's what you should be doing, you should be doing it.
Yeah.
Figure that out. So, yeah. So, but I guess from looking at a perspective in the 1940s, you know, maybe not everyone learned how to swim at that time.
Well, it's still a big thing of like, who learns how to swim, what is equitable pool access and stuff like that. So, but yeah.
Okay. Makes sense. All right. So,
but maybe don't scream that
exactly
in the middle of your super secret mission.
We're going to put you on double secret probation.
Probation. Yeah. Yep.
Today's segment is a game, which will be World War II movie trivia.
Oh boy. I did so well yesterday.
Well, this isn't the same thing you did yesterday. Today is actually trivia question. You know, not trying to guess the movie. You will have that afterward. But first, we'll start with this. Okay. All right, so let's spin the wheel and see what Ernie gets, what type of questions she's going to have to answer. You know, hopefully, it'll be something that you've seen. I'm going to be a little surprised if you've seen this movie. Who directed the 1962 film Merrill's Marauders?
Oh, God.
Okay, it starred Jeff Chandler, Ty Harden, Peter Brown, Claude Atkins is in it. I always love seeing Claude Atkins.
That one I do not
know. You don't
know
who Claude Atkins is? Or you don't know who the movie is?
No, Merrill's Marauders. Oh, okay. I've never heard of that.
Okay, so it is directed by Samuel Fuller, who did a lot of World War II movies at the time.
Okay.
Yeah, he was a director and a producer and, you know.
Yeah, Samuel Fuller sounds familiar. Yeah. I bet if I looked him up, I would recognize stuff.
Okay. All right, so let's move on to the next question. Round and round and round the wheel goes. Okay, who starred in the 1945 film Objective Burma?
You said
1945.
Wait, 1945. So it was during the war. Mm-hmm. Okay, so is it the same guy who did Sergeant York? Okay.
Sergeant York was
Gary Cooper. Gary Cooper. That's who I was thinking.
He's mostly known for doing movies dealing with I guess pirates or swashbucklers.
Washbucklers. All right. So that is not a hint you would have given for like John Wayne or anyone.
It is not John Wayne.
I think he was. I was trying to think like who was still making movies during the war. Like war movies during the war. Swashbucklers. The only one I know about that is Errol Flynn. So did he make war movie?
Yes, he did. And he...
Yay!
and it was Objective Burma.
Good to know!
Yes. It's actually... I saw it a few months ago. I really enjoyed it. It was amazing. I didn't expect to enjoy it. And it was much better than I had thought.
Okay! Yeah. I like that because, yeah, especially 1945, that could go either way in, like, whether it holds up or not.
Yeah. Okay. It's basically about a squadron or a company of men, a platoon that gets stuck behind enemy lines and has to try and get back. You know, he has to help his men to make it through.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's go on to the next question.
Okay.
All Okay. In the 2014 movie The Imitation Game, what is the name of the lead character played by Benedict Cumberbatch?
It's Turing. I can't
Okay,
remember his
that's
first name
fine.
though.
Alan Turing.
Yay! Thank you
Yeah, that no, you got it. That's
Yep.
you know, if you would just say his name is Alan something, maybe not. But you know, once you get the when you get the last name,
No, Turing is the
there you go.
important
Yeah.
part. That's what they named stuff after, so that's what I
Correct.
remember.
Correct. All right, let's move on to your next question. You're doing fine. You're doing fine. Okay, and you finally get a great escape question. Who plays Big X?
Oh, it has been too long since I watched can I get a hit? I can picture him. Who was it?
Well, what else can you think of that he's in?
We talked about this. Why am I not remembering? Next. It's that round face. It's British, right? I'm remembering that right. I'm thinking of the right person,
Yeah,
right? It's the British
yes, he's
one.
British. He's very
He's
British.
the
Yes,
British
yes, yes,
guy.
yes, he's British.
Oh God.
He was a famous director also.
Who?
He won an Oscar for doing Gandhi. He also directed A
Oh.
Bridge Too Far.
Oh. Oh.
He likes creating dinosaurs from frog DNA.
it's what it's Attenborough. Again, the last name, the
That's right.
first name, gone from my brain. What is Richard?
Richard Attenborough. Very good.
Thank you.
Yes, you see, with Attenborough, he has a
That's what
famous
I was
brother
like. If I
who does
say a
voice.
name, I'm gonna guess the wrong one because I like could not keep straight which was which.
All right, his brother is David Attenborough, who I remember in when I was in I guess maybe it was already high school. We had to like watch
Yeah.
his documentaries. Like they had something like it was on Sunday night, and
Yeah, like
that was
he's
like
the
part of the homework. You
documentaries
have to sit and
guy.
watch,
Richard is
you know,
the
in
actor guy.
yeah,
Like, but I don't know.
right,
Yes.
actor and director.
Yes. Oh
Okay.
my God. I can't believe I couldn't remember the
That's okay. That's okay. All right. Let's spin the wheel one more time and see what you get for your last question. In the 2004 film Downfall, who played Hitler?
Oh God, I have no idea of his name. He's a German actor. And all I remember is people saying that he's actually the nicest guy in the world. And like he really loves kids, and their kids would be like hanging out with him at lunch during breaks, but he still had on the Hitler mustache, and it was really like disorientating.
Sounds that way.
But I don't know his name.
The answer is Bruno Ganz.
Oh, okay.
That
He's
was
been
it.
in other stuff. I know that.
Yeah, sure.
Oh no, I'm thinking of something else with the first name Bruno. But yeah.
He has been in other things
Oh yes. Sorry, I didn't mean that the way it sounded. I just you
also.
said that name and I was like, oh, I know that name, and then I'm like, that's not who I'm thinking of at all. But yes, he was very good in that, and I will never forget that little behind the scenes thing that they were talking about.
Makes sense. Makes 100% sense. All right. So let's now play the daily game of name that World War II movie. And you never know, you might get one of the ones that we just talked about. That you might get a little
Yep.
bit of help along the way. So let's
Woo.
spin the wheel and see what you get. Oh, you just missed objective thing. You just missed.
Oh.
So you're gonna have to try and guess something else
Okay.
that was not one of your
So it's not
it's not
that one.
you can put that off to the side.
Oh, good. Only 7,000, whatever more.
Exactly. So this is a movie that came out in 1969, starring Robert Vaughn, Ben Gazzara, George Segal, E.G. Marshall, and it's about the Allies are getting closer, so the Germans decide to blow up a bridge that's the last one crossing over the Rhine. But by doing that, they will be trapping their own men on the wrong side of the bridge. So, what is
That
the name of this movie?
plot sounds very familiar, but I have no idea what movie this is.
Okay.
Because that cast did not sound familiar at
Okay.
all.
And so the name of the movie is The Bridge at Remagen.
Okay. Is there another famous World War II? Because I also,
Well,
the one I'm picturing is in black and white, so it
no, so
wouldn't have been
it's
69.
not that one then.
No, I'm just trying to think, like, are there two about this bridge, maybe?
No. Not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. Maybe it's just a easy go-to trope. Like, we have to blow up this one bridge.
Well, they did that in A Bridge Too Far, or they did that in Saving Private Ryan. So okay, it makes sense.
Yeah. I'm probably thinking of A Bridge Too Far. But anyway.
Okay, Bridge Too Far came out in 77, and that was not black and white either.
No. I just, can't it? I don't know.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
All right, so Tierney, would you like to once again tell people where they can find Tierney Steele?
Well, you can find me talking about movies I actually have seen and do know things about. I've done podcasts on the movie MASH, the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind. I used to do a summer series, so I covered American Graffiti, Dirty Dancing, The Sandlot, all sorts of fun stuff. There are links to these shows on my website, onesteelsister.com, onesteelsister.com. And yeah, that's the best place to find me.
All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to moviearoundminute@movierob.net. So until tomorrow, curry!
Great!